Let's start out with questions, because I heard there were some questions about that last section. Anybody have questions?
Just a quick point about the passage where Paul asked the question, is it legal to beat a Roman citizen?
Okay.
Now this is a country that says, don't step on me. Paul gently asked the question. He gently asked for his rights to be respected. He doesn't insist on it. And so that's something I think for a lot of disciples to really heed. I've run into some really gung-ho patriotic people that come across very offensive in the church.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Paul says, though I'm free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave. So Paul rejected a lot of his rights, right? I have a right to have a wife, like Peter. I don't have a wife. I have a right to be financially supported. I don't accept that financial support. Because Paul, what he wanted to do is he wanted to make sure there were no barriers to the gospel. And I often think about that, like, what are the rights that I hang on to that keeps people from getting close to God? I have a right for this and this as a disciple of Christ. I have a right as a man, as an American citizen. Paul's like, I don't care about any of that stuff as long as I get the gospel out. Now, there was a question that someone asked me during the break about the relationship between the Jewish law and the Roman law. You see, as I was explaining earlier, in Rome, there was a council that said these religions are legal in the empire. Boom, 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 boom. And Christianity hadn't been legalized yet. Because up until this point, Christianity was really viewed by the Roman government as just another sect of Judaism. What do the Christians do? They read the Old Testament. What do the Christians do? A lot of them get circumcised, because a lot of the Christians are still Jewish. Now Romans and non-Jews are being converted who aren't getting circumcised, so they're not following the Jewish law. Wait a minute, are you Jewish or you're not Jewish? Wait a minute, you're not circumcised? Well, you're not Jewish then. Well, if you're not Jewish, then your religion's not an official, accepted religio licito. That's the Italian word of saying legal religion. That was part of the law, was a religio licito. So, if you're a religio illicito, it means that you haven't been sanctioned by the Roman government to practice your religion. And the reason that was dangerous is because religion and culture and government were terrible. We know in the United States we have separating church and state. There are still countries today that have church and state are the same thing. I lived in Argentina for 2 years as a missionary. The official church of the Argentine government is the Roman Catholic Church. The government gives the church money to keep running. When you pay taxes in Argentina, you're paying to run the Catholic Church. You understand? There's no separation of church and state. In Saudi Arabia, the official religion of the country, of the government, is Islam. So you break Islamic law, you're going against the government. See? So now, the Jews are saying, wait a minute, this guy Paul is speaking against the laws of the Jewish religion. Therefore, he's speaking against the laws of Rome. He's practicing a religio illicito. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, let's read chapter 23, verse 2. So Paul's in front of the Sanhedrin. Paul looked at verse 1. Paul looked straight at the Sanhedrin and said, my brothers, I have fulfilled my duty to God in all good conscience to this day. At this, the high priest Ananias ordered those standing near Paul to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, God strike you, you whitewashed wall. You sit there to judge me according to the law, yet you yourselves violate the law by commanding that I be struck. So what's Paul saying?
He's a hypocrite.
Yeah, you're telling me that I'm breaking Jewish law. You're breaking Jewish law right now by having me struck by the face. So here's the high priest. This is Ananias. And he's the son of Nedabias. He was a Jewish high priest from these dates, 48 to 58 or thereabouts. And he actually received his position from Herod. And you can see that there's quite a few. It gets confusing because there's Herod the First, Herod Agrippa the Second. There's all these Herods, so it gets confusing. But here's the interesting thing that's going on. There's these multi-layers going on in history and culture, because Ananias wasn't really officially, legally supposed to be the high priest. And the kings, who are the kings of Israel and Jerusalem and Judea, are not legally the kings and the rulers who are supposed to be in place, because you're supposed to be a son of David. And the Herod family were, the Herodians were not of David. And Ananias was not in the line, as supposedly the son of Zadok. So there's a lot of things going on where they're saying, well, he's not following the law. Well, you guys aren't following the law either. You're having me slapped in the face breaking the law. You're saying that you're accusing me of not following the law, and therefore breaking Jewish law, and therefore breaking Roman law. But you guys aren't even following the law. Let's look a little bit more about this. First of all, he was known to be very corrupt, Ananias. Very corrupt. Taking bribes, having his henchmen go take money out of the temple. You know, the temple had a treasury, right? His guys would just grab things out of the treasury and take them. He would take bribes. This is all historically known. Josephus writes about this. But also, you know, they were politically motivated, right? Because the guys who were in charge of the temple and were the high priest and on the Sanhedrin, a lot of them were politically connected to Rome. And they knew, well, if we mess up our relationship with Rome, we're going to lose our political power. So there's all these power plays going on. Paul's just interested in getting the gospel out and saving people. These guys are interested in protecting their political power, their money, their wealth, their family name. They're vying for position. Now, I'm not saying it's the only motivation they have. Maybe there was some religious motivation, sure. But if you're stealing money from the treasury of the temple, how committed are you really to following the law?
Right?
This is all historically accurate. Now, let's read a little further. So the law that actually Ananias breaks is found in Deuteronomy 25, 1 through 2. And so Paul's just saying, you guys aren't following your own law. Why are you judging me based on the law? Verse 4. Those who were standing near, Paul said, "How dare you insult God's high priest?" Paul replied, "Brothers, I did not realize that he was the high priest, for it is written, 'Do not speak evil about the ruler of your people.'" Then Paul, knowing that some of them were Sadducees and the others Pharisees, called out in the Sanhedrin, "My brothers, I am a Pharisee, descended from Pharisees. I stand on trial because of the hope of the resurrection of the dead." When he said this, a dispute broke out between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. The Sadducees say there is no resurrection, and that there are neither angels nor spirits, but the Pharisees believe all these things. There was a great uproar, and some of the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, stood up and argued vigorously, "We find nothing wrong with this man." So, people in their own council are already saying Paul is innocent. "What if a spirit or an angel had spoken to him?" The dispute became so violent that the commander was afraid for Paul would be torn to pieces by them. Think about how violent this argument was. He ordered the troops to go down and take him away from them by force and bring him into the barracks. The following night, the Lord stood near Paul and said, "Take courage. As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you must also testify to Rome." Do you think this is the first time Jesus had told Paul that he needed to get to Rome?
No.
It's not, probably. Now, Steve pointed out to me that the passage, you want to read that, Steve? Do you remember where it was? Where the Spirit's telling Paul, don't be afraid. Things like, don't be afraid, I have many people in the city. So Paul, no, okay, I'm in danger here, but the Spirit's already told me not to worry about it. So it's not like Paul wasn't scared. Sometimes Paul writes in the Bible that he was trembling, right, with fear and trembling. So the Holy Spirit would tell him, Jesus would tell him every once in a while, don't worry about it, you're going to get to Rome. Nothing's going to happen to you in Jerusalem, you'll be in Rome. You want to read that?
Yeah, it's in Acts chapter 20, verse 22. It says, now compelled by the Spirit, I'm going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. I only know that in every city, the Holy Spirit warns me that prison and hardships are facing me. However, I consider my life worth nothing to me. My only aim is to finish the race and complete the task the Lord Jesus has given me, the task of testifying to the good news of God's grace.
So, Paul had already said, I'm a dead man walking. So it doesn't really matter what happens to me as long as I finish whatever God's laid out for me. And Paul knew that God wanted him to go, Jesus wanted him to go to Rome. Now, why are the Pharisees arguing with each other? Now, the Pharisees are declaring, wait a minute, Paul's a Pharisee. He saw, you know, maybe an angel or God spoke to him or a prophet. Here's what's going on. The Sadducees did not believe in the afterlife or the coming of a Messiah. But the Pharisees did. They believed in resurrection and life after death and the coming of a Messiah. The Sadducees came from the priestly line of Levites and were in charge, spelling error there, in charge of the temple. They were the elite aristocratic people who ran the temple. They had the political power and clout. The Pharisees were actually middle-class Jewish families who were devout to the law. The Sadducees basically only believed in following the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, whereas the Pharisees believed in following the Torah and oral tradition, which came in the Talmud. The Sadducees were willing to allow Greek culture and Roman rule. They accepted it. They said, if our nation of Judah is going to survive, we have to get along with the Romans, so let's get on with it. Many of the Pharisees completely rejected Hellenization, which means being dominated or being influenced by Greek culture and Roman culture. And all these levels of politics is playing into this. Very important. Because what you're going to see is that Luke, from here on out, is going to talk about how many times Paul is innocent according to a Roman governor. It happens over and over in the rest of the book of Acts. But this is where the Sanhedrin met. The place where they met was called the Chamber of Hewn Stones. And here's the temple, and here's where the Sanhedrin met. Now, why do you think they called it the Chamber of Hewn Stones? Could you have a hewn stone, a stone that had any kind of tool used in building of the temple? No. See, the Jews were so afraid that anything was going to be carved into an image. And the Old Testament, God didn't want them to put anything in the temple or anything in the tabernacle that was carved or hewn. So the temple, they tried to keep everything pure so that they wouldn't make the temple out of stones that were carved into any image or shape. This meeting place was not in the temple, so they can make this meeting place out of hewn stones. And this is where the Sanhedrin met. You see, it's right in front of the temple and to the right of it. That's where they met. So let's go back. Here's Paul's in the temple. They grab him. They drag him out here. They're beating him up. The soldiers come out, rescue him. Then they take Paul back into the barracks to protect them. Is it legal to beat a Roman citizen? What are you doing? this guy's a Roman citizen. Okay, we'll have him go before the Sanhedrin in the Hall of Hewn Stones, and that's where he's defending himself. It's all happening in a very small space, very close to each other. Verse 11, the Lord reassures Paul that he's going to get to Rome. You have to testify in Rome. Take courage. What do you think Paul was feeling at this time? And what can we learn from this message from Jesus? A lot of times I think we think Paul is like a superhero, like bullets bounce off of him. I'm super apostle. Throw your bullets at me. I don't think Paul was like that. What do you think?
I think he's questioning because he's human. You know, am I doing the right thing? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Is this really God's plan? And, you know, what is up?
Yeah.
I think he had to have some kind of, after being beaten and rescued already several times and being compelled by the Holy Spirit to feel God's presence, but also at the same time, because he's human, it's like, hey man, I just went through one serious beating, you know, and feeling completely low or beaten down physically and spiritually. And then Jesus says to him to take courage. You've already, as you have testified me in Jerusalem, now you need to go to Rome.
Right.
I was with you here.
I'm with you. I'm still going to be with you. You're going to finish your race.
At some point, I would think that he had to go from one place to the other, go back and forth. Just kind of like, what is going on? What do I need to do next? You know, because he was trying to, he just wanted to get the gospel out. He might have been kind of a little bit frustrated, maybe. Going back and forth, whatever's going to happen.
You know, I think Paul's in jail, and if I were in jail, I'd go, Lord, I'm your disciple. Why are you letting me be in jail? And then Paul could say, but you told me that I was going to testify all over the world. I'm in jail. I'm stuck.
Yeah.
No, Paul's in there going, let me write 13 books of the New Testament. Okay, if he weren't in jail, we probably wouldn't have half of the New Testament.
Right.
So Paul, no matter what situation, and I think he's scared. That's why Jesus shows up and says, I'm with you. I haven't abandoned you. You're going to get all the way to Rome. Not only are you going to get to Rome, but guess what? Rome is going to pay the dime to get you there. And I think that sometimes me as a disciple, I go, Lord, what are you trying to do? Why am I going through this? I feel so stressed. You know, what's the next step? Should I do this or should I not do this in my career? Should I do this or not do this in the ministry? I think Paul probably felt like that. I think sometimes we read the Bible and we think, oh, Paul's this awesome super apostle and he's preaching and he's not afraid and he's just getting after it. I don't think that. I think he had to deal with a lot of the same things we deal with.
Yeah, I think I agree. I feel like Jesus did that because Paul made me think, hey, this is the end. I'm just going to give up and I'm going to die here. But he's saying, take courage. You're going to live. Keep preaching.
Yeah, good point. So the Lord reassures Paul that he must testify in Rome and to take courage. What must Paul have been feeling at this time? What can we learn from this message from Jesus? Let's go read on. And Paul defends himself, and verse 12, the next morning some Jews found a conspiracy and bound themselves with an oath not to eat or drink until they had killed Paul. More than 40 men were involved in this plot. Well, we know they must have died of hunger because they didn't get to Paul. Verse 16, this is an interesting story. But when the son of Paul's sister heard of this plot, he went into the barracks and told Paul. So who is this son of Paul's sister? It's Paul's nephew. You're like, how did that get in there? Did Paul have family members in Jerusalem who had been converted or no? We don't really know all of this stuff. There's a lot of biblical history that we don't know. Verse 17, then Paul called one of the centurions and said, take this young man to the commander. He had something to tell him. So he took him to the commander. The centurion said, Paul, the prisoner, sent for me and asked me to bring this young man to you because he has something to tell you. The commander took the young man by the hand and drew him aside and said, what is it you want to tell me? He said, some Jews have agreed to ask for you to bring Paul before the Sanhedrin tomorrow on the pretext of wanting more accurate information about him. Don't give in to them because more than 40 of them are waiting to ambush for him. So let's see what happens. Verse 22. The commander dismissed the young man with this warning. Don't tell anyone that you have reported this to me. Then he called two of his centurions and ordered them, get ready a detachment of 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen to go to Caesarea at 9 tonight. Provide horses for Paul so that he may be taken safely to Governor Felix. He wrote a letter as follows, Claudius Lysias to His Excellency Governor Felix. This man was seized by the Jews and they were about to kill him, but I came with my troops and rescued him, for I had heard that he was a Roman citizen. See how carefully he is to mention?
Yeah.
I'm protecting this Roman citizen. I'm really very aware of how important it is to protect this Roman citizen. So, why such a large detachment of, I mean, how many guys is he sending to protect Paul?
400.
Okay, he's got 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, 200 spearmen. Okay, Paul's going with over 400 guys surrounding him with spears and horses and swords. See how carefully this commander is following Roman law. I can't let anything happen to this guy. Because if anything happens to this guy, something's going to happen to me. Okay? Do you see how serious the charge of beating a Roman citizen, how dangerous that was? So, here's some ideas to think about. Maybe this commander was afraid that a riot could break out in Jerusalem. And if he... his job was to make sure there were no riots and no breaking of the law. Roman soldiers were not just soldiers, they were also the police force. Paul was a Roman citizen and the commandant was aware of the possible political ramifications of an assassination. He deducted, okay, I don't know who this Paul guy is and I don't know what laws they're accusing him of breaking, but this guy must be super important because the Sanhedrin, which is the Supreme Court of Judah, suppose someone took somebody to the Supreme Court of the United States and said, this guy needs to be executed. Right? That's how serious this is. He's before the Supreme Court of the land. So there were huge political ramifications if Paul was assassinated. The commandant heard that Paul was a perfect pest, a fomenter of discord among the Jews all over the world, a ringleader of the sect of Nazarenes, and assumed that Paul was no trivial character. Why do they want this guy wiped out? The top guys in the land, the chief priest, wants him killed. Huge ramifications. And remember, even amongst the Sanhedrin, they were fighting with each other, right? The Pharisees against him. He's innocent! Let him go! No! Kill him! The political ramifications. So the commandant's like, I don't want to make a mistake.
Exactly.
This guy's before the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court is fighting over him. I better protect this guy. So they take him to Caesarea. Let's look and see if we can... I thought I had a map of Caesarea in here. Maybe I do. Okay. So here they take him to Caesarea. Caesarea was where Rome had put the governor to govern Judea. And we'll look at that on a map here in a minute. So this is Caesarea. It's all ruins now, of course. Now there's a more modern city around Caesarea, but the ancient ruins are still there. In 1997, an excavation team of archaeologists actually discovered the auditorium where Paul had his hearings before Felix. They believe this is the spot right here. So they go from Jerusalem, which is the central power of Jewish culture, political influence and religious influence, and they take them to Caesarea, which is like, I think, 70 miles away, and now they're in the headquarters of Rome in Judea. We'll read this in a minute. But this city was on the harbor. It was built by Herod the Great, who was known for building. He was the same Herod who built the temple. Or who he didn't build the temple, he made it great. And it became the political capital of Roman Judea. And you see how elaborate everything is. Beautiful. I mean, this is 2,000 years old and it's in ruins. Imagine what it must have looked like in its original state. In 1997, the excavations discovered the auditorium where Felix interrogated Paul in Herod's palace. And they also located the prison where Paul was jailed. Let's go back to chapter 23. We're going to do a little skipping here because I know I'm far behind. Verse 30. So the soldiers carrying their orders took Paul with them during the night and brought him as far as Antipatris. The next day they let the cavalry go with him while they returned to the barracks. When the cavalry arrived in Caesarea, they delivered the letter to the governor and handed Paul over to him. The governor read the letter and asked what province he was from. Learning that he was from Cilicia, he said, I will hear your case when your accusers get here. Then he ordered that Paul be kept under guard in Herod's palace. So he's in the palace grounds where the governor actually lives. So the governor wanted him close. He'll be most protected in my palace. You wanted Paul close. He didn't want any trouble. Let's talk a little bit about Felix. Marcus Antonius Felix was a Roman procurator of Judea, which is basically like the governor of Judea, from 52 to 60 AD. He was known as cruel and licentiousness. That means he was, hey, let's party. He was known for taking bribes and increasing crime in Judea. So he was a typical Roman governor who just basically wanted to have power and money. And we know that he was a real person because these coins here were minted by, in his time. This bronze coin was minted by this guy, Felix. And the Greek letters on here say Nero. And then there's a wreath on the outside. There's a palm branch surrounded by the Greek letters that say Caesar. And this, it was dated to be minted around these years. You see how much history there is in the Bible and how much has been corroborated by archaeology? We never want to say, I know the Bible is true because archaeologists have found the bones of Jesus and then his resurrected body. No, of course not. But a lot of the Bible is corroborated by archaeology. The Roman historian Tacitus, Rome was known for having historians who would... You got to remember, you got an empire, okay, that stretches from Europe to Egypt to Judea. So basically, North Africa, the Middle East, a lot of Europe. You got to have a way of governing this huge territory without cell phones, without faxes, without computers. So they had historians who would write things down and send them all over the kingdom through couriers. And he says of Felix that he practiced all kinds of cruelty and lust. He exercised the power of a king with the mind of a slave. They believe that he was a slave at one time in his history and just rose through the ranks because he was so politically cunning. He figured out how to get power and rose to be governor of Judea. And you can find this here, ancient church. They've got this statue of Tacitus outside of the Austrian Parliament building. And we read the letter that Felix got from Claudius. This is the first time in Acts that Paul is declared innocent under Roman law. He literally says in the letter, verse 28. I wanted to know why they were accusing him, so I brought him to their Sanhedrin. I found that the accusation had to do with questions about the law, but there was no charge against him that deserved death or imprisonment. So Claudius Lysias is saying he should be free. Okay? The Pharisees said this man is innocent. Now Claudius Lysias is saying this man should be free. They're like, why is he still being tied up and sent to you? I don't get it. He's confused. Paul's innocence is a theme replayed in the rest of Acts. Several times in the rest of the book, Paul could have been released. Given his innocence under Roman law, what might Paul have appealed? Why might Paul have appealed to Caesar? What do you think? How am I doing on time? He wants to speak to Caesar, so he knows, well, if I say, release me, he's probably not even going to get to speak to Caesar. By Roman law, if someone who was accused of breaking the law appealed to Caesar, you had to go before Caesar. There were actual detachments. So possible reasons for Paul's appeal. Paul knew it was God's will for him to appear before Caesar, Acts 23:11. Paul wanted to protect the brotherhood from persecution. Because we remember he said, Christianity is beginning to break away from Judaism. The Jews are already saying these Christians are pests. They're breaking Jewish law. They're not really Jewish. But the Jewish Christians are still going to synagogue. They're still getting circumcised. They're still worshiping with the Jews who don't believe that Jesus is the Christ. So you have all this tension going on in the synagogues. And the Jews are saying, we don't want them in here in the synagogue with us. But Paul keeps going to where when he's preaching in cities? He still goes to the synagogue. So there's all this conflict going on in the synagogues and in the Roman Empire. Paul probably thought that if he went before Caesar and got released by Caesar, now Christianity is legal. Because right now it's a religio illicito.
You mentioned earlier that the Romans wanted or allowed for legalized religion to be practiced, whatever religion it was, for political reasons.
Yeah, because they said, okay, we've conquested this land, they have these gods, we want to keep these people on our good graces, so we'll let them worship whatever the god they want, because there's millions of gods and we don't know all of them anyway. So we'll let them worship their people. We'll even take their idols and put them in the temple in Rome and acknowledge that they're gods. And we're not interested really in what gods we worship. We just want you to be loyal Roman subjects and pay your taxes and don't cause rebellions. Rome's main ideal in the Roman culture was power and glory. And they believed in all the gods that existed and said, basically, we don't want to upset the gods because the gods, if we get them on our side, we continue to have power and glory. So they were fine with you worshiping whatever god, as long as your god didn't tell you to rebel. Right? And there were other religions that were banned in Rome. Because people would say, well, our god's telling us that Rome is really not the empire we should be in. So you have to be careful. That's why Rome wanted to, and this is common in governments today, right? Think of China. Do they just allow Christians to do whatever they want? No. They throw them in prison. So we have to be careful. Paul knew if he was released, he would eventually be killed by the Jews. Maybe that was his motivation. Paul wanted to witness to as many high Roman and Jewish officials as possible. He went before the Jewish Supreme Court. Now he's going to go before the top dogs of Rome. Paul did not want to be judged in Jewish courts. And Paul knew this news would strengthen the boldness of other disciples. We know this because of Philippians 1:4, where he says, my imprisonment has just helped the church, because now the brothers are being bolder in the sharing of their faith. Here's a model of the palace where Paul was being imprisoned, where Herod's palace in Caesarea, where Felix was governor. Herod's palace later became the administrative headquarters of the Roman province of Judea, led by the Roman proconsul Felix. proconsuls were the administrative and judicial leaders of the Roman Empire. They were directly responsible to Caesar. So he didn't just have... The proconsuls were more than what we call governors because they had the purse strings, they had the political power. See, we have separate. We have three branches of government: judicial, executive, and then the legislative. The legislature makes the laws. The Supreme Court says the law is legal. The president and the executive branch enforces the law. In Rome, you had a governor. He made, well, he didn't make the law. The law was made by somewhere else. But he enforced the laws, but he also had the purse strings. He also had control of the money, so he could carry out his responsibilities. So they had a lot of power. Here are the ruins of... Here's the location. So he was in Jerusalem, and now Claudius Lysias sent them with 450 men to Caesarea, to the coast, where here's the political and religious center of Judea. Here's the Roman power base that controls all of Judea.
It's about 70 miles from...
Yeah. This right here. So they got him out of Jerusalem to protect him. Okay, let's go to chapter 24. 5 days later, the high priest Ananias went down to Caesarea and some of the elders and a lawyer named Tertullus, and they brought their charges against Paul before the governor. When Paul was called in, Tertullus presented his case before Felix. "We have enjoyed a long period of peace under you," which is a lie. There was a lot of turmoil, and because Felix was very cruel and corrupt, they actually say crime increased. But, you know, he's talking to the top dogs, so he's got to be careful. And they brought their charges against Paul before the governor. When Paul was called in, Tertullus presented the case before Felix. "We have enjoyed a long period of peace under you, and your foresight has brought about reforms in this nation. Everywhere and in every way, most excellent Felix, we acknowledge that this profound gratitude. But in order not to weary you further, I would request that you be kind enough to hear us briefly. We have found this man to be a troublemaker." Red flag. "Stirring up riots." Red flag. "Amongst the Jews all over the world. He is a pest against the Jewish nation and against Rome. He is a ringleader." Here we go. He's a mafioso of the Nazarene sect, and even tried to desecrate the temple, so we seized him. We want to see how serious these charges are. So, this is the first time. Let's go back here. Let's see. Okay, I told you that Romans were not allowed to go into Jerusalem with any standards with images on them. This is a standard, or a Roman standard. It's got the picture of Caesar on it. Remember how the Jews were not allowed to have images, right? That's why we don't have faces of coins with David's... We don't have any coins with David's face on it, right? Why would the charge of desecrating the temple alarm the governor of Judea, the Roman governor of Judea?
Essentially, he's breaking the law.
Yeah. "It was against the law for Gentiles to enter the temple area on pain of death. The Romans did not want rioting and mayhem to ensue if a Gentile were to be foolish or ignorant enough to go inside the restricted area. Roman armies were even prohibited from entering Jerusalem with Roman standards because of this image of Caesar." This rock right here, this artifact says, it was this... Historians believe it was created around this time. The translation from the Greek, it was actually, I think, written in Greek, Hebrew, Greek, Aramaic, and Latin. It said, "No foreigner may enter the balustrade around the sanctuary and the enclosure around the temple. Whoever is caught on himself shall be put blame for the death which will ensue." This is how serious the Roman government took. You can't bring a Gentile into the temple area because you'll be killed by the Roman government. See, the Roman government didn't want the Jews to be upset, because then it caused riots. Let me see if I can find this other... I don't have a picture here of what areas of the temple people were allowed to go into and what areas they were not going to. I thought I had it in here. Let's keep reading. Chapter 24. Verse 22. Then Felix, who was well acquainted with the way, that means Christianity, adjourned the meetings. When Lysias the commander comes, he said, I will decide your case. He ordered the centurion to keep Paul under guard, but to give him some freedom and permit his friends to take care of his needs. Now, Felix already knew about Christianity.
Yeah.
He hadn't condemned it. He's like, I'm the governor. Let the Christians do whatever they want, just as long as they don't create problems for me. So he gives Paul a lot of freedom. You can have friends over. You can get, you know. He's not really interested in condemning Paul. Another sign that Paul should probably be released. What happens? Verse 24. Several days later, Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish. He sent for Paul and listened to him as he spoke about faith in Christ Jesus. As Paul talked about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid and said, that's enough for now. You may leave. When I find it convenient, I will send for you. At the same time, he was hoping that Paul would offer him a bribe, so he sent for him frequently and talked with him. When 2 years had passed, didn't he tell him he was going to adjudicate his case? I will decide your case here shortly. Verse 22. When Lysias the commander comes, he says, I will decide your case. Lysias probably showed up several times. Verse 27. When 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, but because Felix wanted to grant a favor to the Jews, he left Paul in prison. It was politically expedient for him just to keep Paul in prison. So let's talk about this. Drusilla, his wife, this is the time of her life, was the youngest daughter of King Agrippa. So she was Jewish, even though Felix was Roman. It wasn't Jewish. She married Aziz, king of Emesa, age 14, only to divorce him when she was courted by Felix. So Felix stole somebody else's wife, committed adultery with her, of course, took her away from another king, and married her. She was interesting because she was Agrippa's daughter, and actually, it was very uncommon for Jewish women to initiate divorces, but she initiated her divorce. So did her sisters. Drusilla and her son Felix died in Pompeii when Mount Vesuvius erupted in 79 AD. See how much history we know about these people in the Old Testament? I mean, in the New Testament, we know about these people. This is Drusilla. And, I mean, imagine a woman that time initiating a divorce from a king to marry Felix. So he just stole her from somebody else. Given what we have learned historically about Felix, is it any surprise that Felix would fear the teachings about righteousness and also was waiting for a bribe? Right? He was known for taking bribes. He was known for increasing crime in Judea. He stole somebody else's wife. This is who he is. In the end, Felix never released Paul, even though he had concluded that Paul was innocent. Thus was the state of affairs in Judea at the time. Corruption at the highest level. In the Sanhedrin, in the temple, with Ananias and all his cronies, and in the Roman government with Felix. Felix was more content with comfort, pleasure, power, and appearance than righteousness. This is the second time Paul is declared innocent in Acts. Maybe the third. Then comes along Porcius Festus, who replaces Felix. Chapter 25. 3 days after arriving in the province, Festus went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem, where the chief priests and the Jewish leaders appeared before him and presented the charges against Paul. They requested Festus, as a favor to them, to have Paul transferred to Jerusalem. Very convenient. For they were preparing an ambush to kill him along the way. Festus answers, Paul is being held at Caesarea, and I myself am going there soon. Let some of your leaders come with me, and if the man has done anything wrong, they can press charges against him there. After spending 8 or 10 days with them, Festus went down to Caesarea. So we have a new head honcho in town, Porcius Festus. He's the new procurator. And Josephus, who's a Jewish historian, actually writes favorably about Festus. He recorded that the time that Festus took his position, murderous bandits roamed the countryside, looting and burning villages. They also mixed in with crowds of worship and killed people with short, curved swords. Festus discovered that an impostor had gone to the Sicarii, who were these guys who were killing people, and he basically had them wiped out and restored order. But he has a good reputation as being an honest and noble person versus Festus, who's super corrupt, waiting for a bribe from Paul. We have a coin made during the rule of Festus. He was procurator from this time, and this is the coin that were minted during his time. Who's Josephus? Josephus is somebody who we rely on for a lot of biblical history in the New Testament, because Josephus, his Jewish name is Yosef ben, and I don't know how to pronounce it, Matityahu. He was born in Jerusalem from a father who was a priestly descent, a mother of royal ancestry. But he actually rose up against Rome, lost, surrendered, became a Roman citizen, and then started being a translator for Vespasian, who enslaved him. Vespasian was the Roman general who attacked Jerusalem and Judea. But then he became his translator, and Vespasian freed him and gave him Roman citizenship. So then he became Roman and became a Roman historian. But he writes about Jewish history and the wars that Rome and Jews had. So he talks about all these political figures that we are discussing now, Drusilla. He writes about Felix. So he mentions all of these. So do Tacitus and Suetonius. They mention him as well. But I want you to know these names because they're people that theologians and biblical historians rely on for accuracy. Let's go to Acts chapter. We're going to skip chapter 25. How much time we have left? So we don't have much time left. Paul goes before Festus, and Festus basically says, this guy's innocent. Festus says, this guy's innocent. Let's read really quickly chapter 25, verse 19. Instead, they had some points of dispute with him about their own religion, about a dead man named Jesus who Paul claimed was alive. I was at a loss how to investigate such matters, so I asked if he would be willing to go to Jerusalem and stand trial on these charges. But when Paul made his appeal to be held over to the Roman emperor's decision, I ordered him held until I sent him to Caesar. So Paul goes before Agrippa, and what conclusion did they come to? It says, verse 27, Festus says, for I think it is unreasonable to send a prisoner to Rome without specifying the charges against him. So he doesn't even understand what Paul's being accused of. I mean, if this guy's innocent, he's breaking some law I don't understand, and they're accusing him and they want him killed, but I don't really know because he's not breaking any Roman laws, so I don't really know how to jump. Agrippa, can you hear this case for me? Because you're married to a Jew, you're Jewish, and you know, you understand Jewish law. Verse 20, chapter 1. Chapter 26, verse 1. Then Agrippa said to Paul, you have permission to speak for yourself. Paul gets his defense. And then in chapter 26, verse 32, Agrippa said to Festus, this man could have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. So we see this over and over again in the book of Acts. The Sanhedrin are divided. The Pharisees say, he's innocent. Let him go. Felix says, I don't know what to charge this guy of. He's really innocent, but I don't want to let him go, because if I let him go, I'm going to be in trouble with the Jews. I'll keep him in jail. Felix says that. I'll let Porcius Festus take care of it. Porcius Festus says, I don't know what to accuse this guy of. I don't know what to put for charges. I'm confused. I don't understand why they're fighting over this guy. But I want to keep the peace. I know the Jews are volatile. Let me get Agrippa in here. Agrippa comes in and goes, this guy hasn't broken any Jewish laws, but since he appealed to Caesar, we better send him, because we don't want to break Roman law, which says when a prisoner appeals to Caesar, and he's a Roman citizen. He needs to be sent before Caesar. See, Paul is consciously getting to Rome by hook or by crook. I got to get to Rome. I have a mission. I've got to. It's very purposeful on Paul's part. And Jesus even told them, don't worry, Paul, you're going to get to Rome. The cool thing is now he's going to Rome and he's not paying for it. The Roman government's paying for it. Okay. So we're going to skip. Chapter 26, Paul gives us his defense. And what's Paul's defense before Agrippa? Basically, you can go back and read it. Paul's defense is that the full gospel message was preached in the Old Testament. He probably quotes Psalms 110, verse 1 and 2. He probably goes into Genesis 15 and 16. He probably talks about Psalms chapter 2. He probably mentions Isaiah 53. And he's just going and saying, Jesus is the Messiah. He had to suffer. He had to rise from the dead. Psalm 16, 9 through 11. He's going to be a light to the Jews and the Gentiles. Isaiah 49, verse 6. Psalms 22, verse 27. And then Herod Agrippa says, he's innocent. But since he appealed to Caesar, let's send him to Caesar. And here's a little history about Herod Agrippa. He was the eighth and last ruler in Judea in the Herodian dynasty. Agrippa was overthrown by Jewish subjects in 66 AD because he supported Romans in the first Jewish-Roman war. See how volatile it is at times? How the Romans just want to keep the Jews happy so that they don't riot. And the Jews just want to be left alone and don't want Rome to interfere in their internal affairs. And you have this political maneuvering going on in between the Herodians and Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin. And you have, you know, Felix who's corrupt trying to make money and getting bribes and using violence to get what he wants. All this is going on. Here's Herod Agrippa's coins to commemorate. Here's Herod Agrippa. He's Jewish. He makes a coin honoring the Romans for having victory against the Jews. He's Jewish. He's minting coins to honor the Romans for conquering his own people. Why? Because he wants to stay in power. See how messed up things up? In Acts 25:14 and Acts 26:30, we run into Bernice. And here's a statue of her. So, I remember I mentioned these historians, Josephus, Suetonius, Tacitus, Dio Cassius, Aurelius Victor, and Juvenal. They all wrote about her. So, here are all these ancient writers writing about people in the Bible. Drusilla was married to Felix, and Bernice was married to Herod Agrippa. Drusilla divorced Aziz, the king of Emesa, and then married Felix. This is Bernice. We're skipping a lot because we don't have time. But she is the wife this is where it gets computer. She's the daughter of King Herod Agrippa and sister of Herod Agrippa II. See how it gets confusing? Okay. So in Acts 26, let's start in verse 24. At this point, Festus interrupted Paul's defense. You are out of your mind, Paul, you shouted. Your great learning is driving you insane. So, of course, he doesn't believe. Now, Bernice is married to Agrippa, and she is his half-sister. Do you see what's going on? You see how corrupt everything is? A king is marrying his half-sister. Oh, it was rumored that they were lovers, but they never really married. It's like, hey, that's not legal, according to the Old Testament. And the Sanhedrin's breaking their own law, but accusing Paul of breaking the law when they're breaking their own laws. And you have one sect in Jerusalem who's fighting to get the Romans out, and another sect in power who's trying to keep them in. So this is all very important. We're just going to skip chapter 27. Paul is transferred from Caesarea and he has to get all the way to Rome. This is one of this is a replica of the ships that they used to get him there. In chapter 28, we have Publius, whose father was sick, and Paul healed him. And they say, tradition says that he became the bishop of Malta. Christianity has been called a sect three times in the book of Acts. Paul gets to Rome, and he gives his testimony to the Jews in Rome. And they probably listen to him because he's a Pharisee, but not because he's a Christian missionary. Since Paul was a Pharisee by training, it was quite possible that the Jews in Rome gave Paul a hearing out of respect for his background. Here's Paul. He's in Caesarea. They transport him. We're going to skip the entire journey when he gets shipwrecked and everything. And this is his journey up to Rome. And historians don't really know exactly. Some historians think Paul was released and ended up going to Spain and preaching for a while and coming back and then being killed in Rome. But Paul, tradition has it, was eventually beheaded by Nero in 64 AD. Nero is another crazy story. Killed his own mother to retain his power and influence. Was known to be kind of crazy. So here's Paul saying, I have to testify to Caesar to see if I can get Christianity legalized, and I'm going to go before Nero, who's half mad. Killed his own mother. That's the end. Any questions, comments?
I just think it's amazing how God works, because he started off his journey and got that encouragement from the Spirit and Jesus that you will make it to Rome. And years later, continuing to preach the gospel and strengthen the collective apostles throughout the region. Because his life, his testimony all the way through strengthened the apostles, and they were able to also, just with zeal, maintain the energy.
That's a great point. You know, we could think about all the things that were going wrong. How corrupt the Jewish government was, how corrupt the Roman government was. You had a crazy ruler in Nero. He was insane. And he didn't try to kill his mother once. He tried several times until he finally accomplished it. Jewish leaders who were super hypocritical were fighting amongst each other. Jewish rulers who were marrying and having sex with their sisters. Jewish women who were divorcing their husbands to marry Roman governors, which was obviously against the law, right? You're not supposed to marry Gentiles, right? So all this impulsiveness, I don't care about any of that. How many things are going on today where we go, our government's so messed up, look at Trump, you know, our government's so messed up, look at what's going on in the Supreme Court, the Democrats and the Republicans can't get along, they're fighting, our country's divided, blacks against whites, whites against Hispanics, Hispanics against Asians, you know, people crossing illegal. I mean, I look at this stuff online or I hear it in the news and I go, God, I have one mission, get myself to heaven and take as many people with me. Same thing in Argentina. When I was there, there was an attempted coup. I was like, I was scared to death to share my faith then, because I was like, what if I share my faith and they arrested me? In Argentina, you get arrested and you disappear. That was the history. 30,000 people disappeared in the 5 years previous to when I got there. And like, I can't worry about the political situation in Argentina. I got to share the gospel. That's what I'm here for. You know, a lot of times, well, what about my job? And what am I going to do this in my job? Am I going to get a raise? Are they going to fire me? You know, what about, you know, this political stuff going on in our country? You can't worry about that stuff. The same thing was happening back then. Paul just said, I've got to get to Rome. I've got to preach the gospel to high and low, because that's what my mission is. And he was afraid. He struggled with fear and anxiety probably. But then you think, well, he was arrested. That was bad. Well, I'm going to write half the New Testament while I'm in jail. Yeah. I've gotten beaten by rods. Oh, well, this one I'm going to allow them to do, but the next one I'm going to say no. And there's a reason why I'm allowing myself to be beaten here, but there's a reason why I'm not letting them beat me here. Could you imagine making that decision? So thanks for your time. I'm like 6 minutes over time. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for all your comments. They were awesome.
Thank you.
And I really encourage you, not just with the book of Acts, but with any book in the Bible you read, start reading the history and figuring out, why are they saying this and why is this going on? What kind of stuff did they have to... Sometimes we read about what happens to persons in the Bible who are real persons that we've just seen, and we wonder, how could they stay faithful through all this mess? That's a good question to ask yourself as you're reading the history and understanding what's going on spiritually in the Bible. Let's end up with a prayer. Father in heaven, thank you that you allow us to have this incredible historical document, the book of Acts, to help us understand how difficult it was back then to follow you. But Father, we have challenges today. We have people right now suffering in prison for your name. We have people right now whose lives are in danger in your name. Help us to be bold, to be courageous, and to know that you're with us, even through all these trials, the way you were through with Paul. We love you and we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you.
You're welcome.